Om Shanti. Today the subject is deepening yoga. And one of the things that some of us older BKs have been doing is getting together in little conversation groups to think about the very depth of the very simple concepts that we work with. And of course, one of them is yoga. So one important question to consider, but not to give an off-the-cuff answer to, is what exactly is yoga? And you already know the off-the-cuff answers, so there's no need to give them. But behind those answers, going deeper, what really is yoga? We have many photographs of Brahma Baba in yoga. And we have paintings of Brahma Baba. So behind me is a painting of Brahma Baba, but then we also have photos of Brahma Baba. And so the photos we can perhaps look at very carefully to try to see from his face what is he doing. Right? And why do we have Brahma Baba? Not very long ago, I was visiting a place where they were teaching Hatha Yoga. And I observed that they had always two people. One of them was explaining what the different poses were and how to do them, and then the other one was demonstrating it. And I think that we also have this with Shiv Baba explaining everything and Brahma Baba demonstrating everything. And if you just have an explanation but you don't have a demonstration, then you can't understand. There are many people who are studying different arts, and they also have the same arrangement. They will have an explanation and they will have a demonstration. Because there are many things that, like interpretation of music, cannot be described, but you just do it. And someone either gets it or they don't get it. And that's the way it is. Now, I'll tell you some incidents in which Baba indicated whether someone's yoga was right or not right. And one of them is a story that Dadi Jenki mentions from time to time in her classes, so you may have heard this. It's an incident where she was cooking some milk, bringing the milk to the boil. And I don't know if you've ever done that, but if you want to bring milk to the boil, you have to be absolutely present with that milk. Otherwise, it's going to go over the edge. And you have to be able to stop the fire immediately at a particular moment. Otherwise, it will not be right. If you do it too soon, it's not ready. If you do it too late, it's too late. So it has to be exactly precise. And so Dadi was doing this, and she burnt her finger. A big pot of milk, you must have seen in the milk department how those big pots are. And so, of course, the relationship between Baba and his children, especially in the early days, there were very few. everything was mentioned. And so Dadi mentioned this to Baba, that she burnt her finger. And Baba's immediate response was, your yoga wasn't accurate. Right? So what does that tell us about yoga? It tells us that yoga is about being in a certain frame of mind where you are present for what is happening. Right? Otherwise, it will go wrong. So that's one description of yoga, or definition of yoga. Another one, just to give you a few of these so that you can get an idea of what really is yoga. This was when I was quite new in Gyan, and there were it was nothing like the English Murli, and in fact there weren't any English speaking people except me. And so everything, whatever was being said, had to be translated. And if any of you are translators, you know that that's a very huge task, to translate everything that's being said and have somebody hanging on your every word to know what's happening. And so I said to Dadi with a lot of discouragement that, Dadi, I don't understand Hindi, I don't know what you're saying, what should I do? And she said, well, your yoga's not right. If your yoga would be right, you would understand me. So I said, ooh, is that right? And so I learned to tie my mind into hers, so that I could understand what she's saying while she's saying it or before she says it. And that is also yoga. You know this expression, man-mana-bhav, in which you have to tie your mind to Baba's mind, and then you are linked, you're connected. And so you are tuned in. When you're tuned into a radio station, then you know what's going on that radio station. If you're not tuned in, then you won't. So yoga is also something to do with tuning in. And I found that by tuning in to Dadi, I would be able to know exactly what she's saying. And I also found that in those days, the only Hindi I could understand would be Hindi that is related to Gyan. Any single word that was Lokik, I couldn't understand. So I thought, that's interesting. Just only the yoga is with the knowledge. So one is the yoga is with Baba himself, and the other is the yoga with what is in his mind, his thoughts, his ideas, his instructions, his recommendations, his description. And Baba's sanskaras are the sanskaras of knowledge. Our sanskaras are the sanskaras of performing our roles, which could be good, bad, or indifferent depending on when and where and how. But what Baba does is he speaks the knowledge. So this is his sanskaras. And whatever is your sanskaras, you'll express that. So Baba has been talking to us about changing our sanskaras. And many people, I imagine, are wondering what is wrong with them that Baba thinks they need to change, as everybody seems to feel that they are absolutely fine the way they are. Is that right? If you really pinpoint something that needs to be changed, you'll find that's quite difficult, isn't it? And even if you do pinpoint it, like for example, I was talking with somebody who said, they were visiting Brahma Kumaris, and so what did you take from your visit here? So one of the things was, well, I think it's a good idea for me to try and give up my anger. But I want to do it without yoga and without God, just by myself. So I said, well, that'll be difficult. And my actual opinion is that that'll be impossible. Because there's something about yoga with Baba that makes change possible. And that anytime anybody wants to change without Baba or without yoga, can't be done. And so there's something very, very transformative about actually having yoga. So Baba says, connect yourself in yoga with me. So when you're wanting to be connected with Baba, the first thing is you have to be on the same level as Baba. And his level is the soul world, the seed form, the incorporeal state, ever pure, detached, unaffected by any of the performances of his children. And so if we are in our ordinary consciousness or body consciousness, we will not be able to establish ourselves in yoga with Baba, because we will be on the material level and he is on the spiritual level, and you can't make that connection between those two. And so yoga has to begin with the soul consciousness. And so then you have to think, what is a soul? What is a soul? You say, it's mind, intellect, samskaras. Well, it's not. A soul has mind, intellect, samskaras, but what is it? Yeah? What is a soul? It's a what, and then it's a who. You know, and which soul am I? What kind of soul am I? There are categories of souls. How do you become detached from your mind, intellect, and samskaras? Because after all, Baba has suggested that what we need to do is to donate our mind, intellect, samskaras, along with our body, mind, and wealth. Thoughts, words, and actions. All that has to be donated or renounced. So then if you don't have a mind and you don't have an intellect and you don't have any samskaras, what's left? It's something very, very subtle. You must have heard this expression from Daddy Janki many times, and we have Sister Marge in the gathering here, and she had done a very beautiful dance presentation of this very famous instruction from Daddy Janki, which is, don't think, right? So now, you must have grappled with that. Can you not think? Yes? No? You know, in the different kinds of non-BK forms of meditation, they're always trying to bring the mind to a zero stage. And I have actually seen somebody doing that, but it takes years of practice. And even then, it's without sufficient information, and so ultimately it won't work. So what Baba has taught us, in order for us to reach the point stage, because this is the latest instruction, right? Be absolutely still. And if you think of this word shanti, it means silence, as well as peace, as well as stillness. So to bring your mind to a point of absolute stillness, and the mind is very, very, very subtle, and that's still gross in comparison with the soul. So the soul is very, 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 very subtle, which means that Shiv Baba is very, 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 very subtle as well. So you have a very, very subtle point of light, which is you, needing to become absolutely still in order to come out of time and space and make contact with the tiny, tiny point of Shiv Baba, who is still and who is perpetually out of time and space. Do you see what I'm saying? It's not so easy, Raj Yoga. We say it's easy, Raj Yoga. There was one brother who came to me once in great despair. He said, "Sister, what is easy about easy Raj Yoga?" And I sympathized with him. I said, it's publicity, you know, easy Raj Yoga. It's not so easy, you know. I mean, it's easy when you know how, perhaps. And it's easy in the sense that the information that Baba gives us is complete and adequate, and all that you need in order to be able to do it. So there's no struggle to try and understand what he's talking about, except that we are mostly very gross, and we have to become very, very subtle. So I think that this is a very key point, the whole question of what is a way to make myself subtle and what makes me gross. Now, if we take a look at this from the perspective of Hindu bhakti, because Baba has contextualized his knowledge in Hindu bhakti. And one of the things he says is that the devotees make a large form of the Shivalingam, right? Sometimes it's extremely large. But it never gets all that small. You can get, you know, like little Easter egg type things, you know. But on the whole, they, for the purposes of worship, you know, they need to be at least big enough so that the different ritual ablutions and oblations and items that need to be placed upon the Shivalingam, so it has to be big enough to hold those things. And so what happens with the development of rituals is that the consciousness lost the ability to conceptualize non-material items. And so sometimes Baba says that the devotional intellect of the conventional Hindu devotee would be called a tamopradhan buddhi, right? The impure or gross intellect. So tamopradhan doesn't only mean impure, but it very much means gross. And yoga is very, very subtle. And then not very many days ago, it came in the Murali that you have reached only up to the Rajo stage. So you've gone from Tamo Pradhan to Tamo to Rajo. So that's not very far. And the Rajo stage corresponds to the Copper Age stage. And Copper Age stage means that the intellect is still gross. You know, it may not be like totally gross and unclean like this, but it's still gross. Now, when Brother Jagdish has been writing about these, and you may have looked at some of his work, because his writings form the bulk of the Brahma Kumari's literature, and then he left the body in around 2001 or so. After that, few other writers have been coming onto the BK bookshelves. But Brahma Baba, Shiv Baba, Bap Dada had identified Jagdish Bhai as Sanjay. And if you have read the myths of the Mahabharata, you will know that Sanjay is the character who was telling what was going on between Arjun and Krishna. That means to say, between Shiv Baba and Brahma Baba. And so their conversation, their discussion, which we know as the Muralis, then is explained to the other people. And so that is the work of Jagdish Bhai. And so he did a lot of research and a lot of churning about the intellect and yoga. Because one of the names of Raj Yoga is Buddhi Yoga. So on one hand we have Manmana Bhav, where you tune your mind with Shiv Baba. Then you have Buddhi Yoga, which is loosely translated as, and incomprehensibly translated as, the yoga of the intellect. I don't think any single one of you has the slightest clue what is meant by the yoga of the intellect. Am I right? Yes? You can't possibly know, because it doesn't have any meaning in English. The yoga of the intellect. It's not an expression that is current in the English language. So then, it's a very literal translation for Buddhi Yoga. You see, and first of all, is Buddhi the intellect? And what do you mean by the intellect? You see, it's very, very difficult to put your finger on it, isn't it? What is an intellect? I am questioning your ability to process these words without a lot of description. You know, because this term, yoga of the intellect, is a BK word, which you will not find anywhere else except in BK Muralis. And so the question is, what is meant by the intellect in BK? What is meant by yoga of the intellect? You see? Like, for example, yogdan. We have this expression, yogdan, which is translated as donation of yoga. Right? But it's used to mean cooperation. There's a big difference between donation of yoga as an idea and cooperation as another idea. The same word for both. So this expression, yoga of the intellect, is what we call as a jargon word. Jargon means it's very specific to BKs. Now, but we have to be able to describe exactly what that expression refers to. And it's very, very subtle. So what is your intellect? What is your buddhi? So Baba says that it is the capacity of the soul to distinguish. So one of the eight powers is called power of discrimination. Right? Power to distinguish. You have a real diamond, you have a fake diamond. And the buddhi is supposed to be able to distinguish between these two. So this is that faculty to distinguish, which we don't normally in English, we don't normally refer to that as the intellect. But here in BK we call it the intellect. So we're using the word intellect in a very, very unusual manner. And so we have to define our terms very, very precisely in order to know what on earth is meant by the yoga of the intellect. Because if you don't know what it means, you can't do it. How can you do it? You know? Like if somebody will say to you, okay, put 3 chapatis worth of sugar into a pot and stir it with 5 apples worth of milk. You know how to do that because these are not normally measurement terms. Do you see what I'm saying? So we have a terminology which is being used in a very specialized way, and we do not have very good clarity on exactly what that is. And so now, one of the things about yoga is concentration. And so one of the interpretations of this word buddhi is the capacity to concentrate. Another of the meanings of this word buddhi is willpower. And you wouldn't normally understand that by using the word intellect, which doesn't have normally anything to do with concentration or willpower. But it is to do with concentration and willpower. So the yoga of the intellect means by the power of your will, you concentrate your attention. So the buddhi is your attention as opposed to your intellect. Because we don't know what an intellect is in English. We say so-and-so has a good intellect. It means they can process ideas. But then yoga of the processing of ideas, that becomes more difficult to comprehend or conceptualize, you see. So we need to really think about these words so that we can understand them by describing them and defining them in many different ways. It becomes more and more clear what exactly he's asking us to do, you see. Then he talks about the fire of yoga. And then he talks of agan and lagan. So agan is fire, lagan is love. So it's a fire of love. So you've got concentration, and then you have love, and then you're wondering whether love belongs in the mind or the intellect, or the sanskaras, or the karma, or the attitude, or the intention, or the feelings. You see, it's very subtle. Now, all of these different words are kind of vague, you see. And so when you want to do something precise, using terminology that's vague, you can be having a hard time to do that because it's not clear. So one of the things about this term discrimination, which is also connected with, there's another image that is given for yoga, which is a lens, right? If you put light through a lens, some of you may be wearing glasses, right? And if you put light through your glasses, you will see that when you keep that lens at the right distance above a piece of paper, that light will take the form of a small point of light. Have you tried that? Yeah? So that is called the focal distance of that lens. So one of the things about the intellect is it's the not just about concentration, but also this ability to take something wide and focus it on something little. So that's also what the buddhi does. And so buddhi yoga is the ability to focus your attention on Baba, so that you do not get distracted. So when your focus of attention is distracted, we would say your yoga is broken. So the ability to maintain focused attention for a long period of time. And in order to be able to do that, and the intellect has to focus the attention of the mind. You see, because you've got manmana bhav and you have buddhi yoga. So both the mind and the intellect are involved in having contact with Baba. So what he tells us to do is to churn. He says, vichar sagar mantan. Vichar sagar mantan means churn the ocean of ideas, literally. So now when you listen to the Murali, what you have is three pages of words that come out of Shiv Baba's mind and that are interpreted by Brahma Baba. So if you know anything about music, the player of the music, which is written down on a piece of paper, is that player will interpret those notes. And each and every player will interpret the same notes differently from the next one. Correct? And so the accuracy of playing those notes is one aspect of the requirement for a good musician, and then the other is the quality of the interpretation. And I think that one is called technical ability and the other is aesthetic ability. And so in the same way, are you following me okay? Yeah. So in the same way, in yoga, we're using the intellect, which is to do with more technical side of things, where you have to take thoughts, concepts, and you have to move those concepts around in your mind. So in that case, your mind is like a big soup pot, and the ideas are the ingredients, and your intellect is a spoon, and you are stirring them around. Because if you're a good cook, I don't know if you've seen that little cartoon called Ratatouille, have you? Yes? So it's all about the je ne sais quoi to make the right taste. Right? The very good use of exactly what flavors, so that the person who's going to taste it is satisfied. And so in the consciousness, the taster is the mind. And tasting what you have created to enable you to make a connection with Baba is something which we call experience of yoga. Right? Because you have yoga with Baba and you want something to happen. Right? what's supposed to happen. You're supposed to experience that you made contact with God, because if you made contact and you didn't have an experience, then you would have to conclude that you didn't make contact. Because if you make contact, suppose you have a wire and you make contact with the, you know, electrical current, then something will happen. You will feel the current. So also Baba says that when you do concentrate your mind on Baba accurately, you will experience the current. You see? So he uses lots of analogies from the regular everyday world to help us to understand whether we've got it right or not. You see? And because there's so many different aspects of yoga, we have to kind of go through all the different ones so that we get a whole picture of the relationship with Baba, the connection with Baba. And the whole question of relationship is another whole story, you see. Because having a relationship with someone, which relationship as opposed to which other relationship, is also an aspect of connection. So you have a technical aspect, an electrical aspect, an intellectual aspect, an aesthetic aspect, a relationship aspect. All of them are included, you see. And what Baba had said in the Murli of 31st December is that Baba is your sansar. Your sansar, your world. And if Baba is your world, then where would the sanskaras come from? Sanskaras. Because this is all about reaching a point through yoga where the sanskaras of body consciousness merge or become completely dormant. And that this contact with Baba causes your divine godlike attributes or sanskaras to be indistinguishable from Baba. So you cannot become God, but you're supposed to become like God. But if you don't know what God is like, how are you going to do that? You see? So it's a very, very tricky thing, actually. So I hope I'm not making this too difficult. Is it okay? Are you following me all right? And, of course, we have been doing this for years and years and years, right? And some people have been doing it for double the number of years that I've been doing it. You see, and we all are thinking about this in a way, going back to square one or going back to the drawing board many times. Because every time you do that, you get it slightly more subtly. And so even if you find yourself struggling to figure out what on earth is this thing called Raj Yoga, it's absolutely fine, because each and every time you sit and think about it, it becomes microscopically clearer in your mind. And one of the things that's very necessary because of this is, in order to really progress in yoga, you have to be very, very patient. Very patient with yourself. Then the other thing to complicate the whole story is the subject of Maya, right? Because Maya is a mysterious thing whose job is to prevent you from having yoga, and who's very, very expert in doing that. And so sometimes you must feel that it's very unfair, that the odds of Maya succeeding are far greater than the odds of you having yoga. But then Baba gives us another little thing, which is, if you have a step of courage, Baba will give you 1,000 steps of help. So that kind of makes the odds a little bit more even. And so part of that courage is to stick at it, you see, because the other thing that Baba has told us about this is you have to have consistency. And so Baba says that you have to do the act of stopping what else you're doing and try to be in yoga with Baba frequently. Just now he said every hour you must stop completely and just apply a full stop or go into the seed stage, you see, and just have absolute stillness for a second. And that takes a lot of practice to be able to do that, and doing that also constitutes a practice. Last year, last season, Baba said, you should have 10 minutes yoga every hour. And everybody said, what? How can we operate like that? You see, because one of the things is we're all very busy, 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 and this and that, right? And everything is going very fast, and we're all caught up in something that Dadi Gulzar calls action consciousness. So there's body consciousness, and then there's action consciousness, which is pretty much another kind of body consciousness. And then there's soul consciousness. So we have to spend quite a lot of time being soul conscious and practicing soul consciousness and figuring out what soul consciousness is, because soul consciousness is the first step for there to be yoga, you see, because yoga in a way is a two-step process. First you have to go in, which is the soul conscious stage, and then you have to go out, way out, or up, where you contact Baba. So we have this map of the three worlds in which he says that you are sitting on planet Earth, and you go with the vehicle of your mind past the subtle regions and sit with Baba in the soul world. And even when Brahma Baba was being the vehicle of Shiv Baba, and Shiv Baba was telling the brothers and sisters to remember him, he said, though I am here in front of you, don't remember me here, remember me there. You see. So then comes the thought, can you remember him where he isn't at that moment? Because he says, remember me there, don't remember me here. I come here to talk to you, to tell you to remember me, there. You know, so that's very subtle also. Because you have to be able to understand that the one who is out of time and space comes into time and space to tell you to go out of time and space and join him out of time and space in your original spaceless, timeless condition with him. And the reason we have to do it here is because when you're there in the soul world, you won't be able to do it. You can only be in the soul world when you're here on the earth consciously. Do you understand? That's a tricky thing. Because your consciousness is only conscious when you're in a body. And the problem is, when your consciousness is in a body, it becomes body conscious. But you have to be in a body and soul conscious. Can you follow this all right? So you have to be very concentrated to consider these states of being. And we very, very easily lose the thread of thought, right? And so being able to not lose the thread of thought is an aspect of concentration, is an aspect of yoga. So for example, one of the ways that you can practice to stay with the thread of thought, which is going to help your yoga, is when you're listening to the murli, that you don't get distracted. And so you have quite a lot of brothers and sisters who insist that the murli reader reads only the murli and not any comments on the side. Right? Because when you have comments on the side, it can help, but it can also break the flow. So if you have comments on the side that help, it's okay because it stays within the flow. But if you have a comment on the side that breaks the flow, then you find that your work to develop your power of concentration is getting interfered with by the instrument teacher. And then you will feel irritated. Is it right? So it's a balance, because on the one hand, explanations are very helpful, and on the other hand, they get in the way. They can get in the way. So I think you have to have very good yoga to be able to read the murli to a number of people such that the flow of the murli and the flow of concentration of the people who are there is all going along nicely. So that you arrive at the end of the murli at a holistic experience of Baba's expression. Because the murli is your basic ingredients for your mind. You see? So when Dadi Janki was asking Baba, because she came a year and a half after the first batch of BKs, due to being in bondage, lokic bondage. And so she asked Baba that, what can I do to catch up with everyone? And he said, read the murlis 12 times every day. And then she thought, well, I'm going to do it 24 times. And she did that for quite some time. And due to this practice, she has a very, very good capacity for churning. Now, mostly what I have found is it's quite hard for people to have sufficient concentration on the murli to hold in their mind the totality of what's in all those three pages. And if you read the murli many times, the first time you read it, you get a superficial experience of it. And then you read it again, where you note more deeply the points that you noted initially as being points that are particularly interesting to you on that particular day. Am I right? And then you read it another time, and you begin to find that the murli is such a phenomenal thing that it has levels, and the more times you read it, the more your ability is developed to penetrate deeper into those levels. And so if you read a Murli very many times, then you can actually grasp what's known as, in BK language, the soul of the Murli. Have you heard this expression before? The soul of the Murli. There is such a thing as a soul of the Murli. So the soul is the essence, isn't it? And so if you can grasp that essential core of even one Murli, then this is enough to establish you in good yoga. Because the words of the Murli are coming directly out of Sri Baba's mind. And they have been interpreted by Brahma Baba, who has been identified as the guaranteed person who succeeds. Yeah, because Baba's place has been fixed as the number one successful BK. Well, he's just B, he's not BK, right? But Brahma Baba and Mama are guaranteed to succeed, which means that the demonstration that they give or the interpretation that they offer of the Murli is guaranteed by Sri Baba to be correct. Therefore, we have two sources to help us. One is what Sri Baba says, and the other is how Brahma Baba interprets it. And then, not very long ago, somebody said, well, we didn't see Brahma Baba. And he said, well, but you saw Dadi Prakash Mani. And so Dadi Prakash Mani has also been given the guarantee that she has become Karmatit. And so whatever is her interpretation, that is also guaranteed to be right. You see. So you have these demonstrators as well as you have the Murli, which is the verbal description. And so if you have that in your mind and you're able to spend an hour a day when you're listening to the Murli, if you can actually, and this is something Baba had told once, that if you can actually experience and become the embodiment of each point as it goes from point to point, that means you have to be very concentrated and you can't miss any of it. It means you can't be distracted. And I found that usually there's about 300 points in each Murli. So that means that you can adopt 300 different mental poses in that hour or hour and a half, whatever it is that it takes to go through the Murli. See? That is sufficient to enable you to be in good yoga and then perform during the rest of the day. So we have enough information and enough practice of being concentrated to be able to stop every hour. And for that, especially, Baba gives us the knowledge of drama. Because if you have the knowledge of drama very clearly in your mind, then you will not be distracted by events in the drama. And in order to really have the knowledge of drama clear in your mind, you have to be very detached from your own self. Because we have a tendency to think that I am not part of the drama. And so we think all the other things are drama, but I am somehow excluded from the drama. No. I, my mind, intellect, sanskaras, my production, my performance is also included in the drama. So I have to be able to be detached from myself in order to really apply the knowledge of drama. Because if you make a mistake, in your own mind you think this is a mistake, then you'll be affected by that. And you will feel bad, I made this mistake. And you'll feel worse if somebody saw you make a mistake and maybe even talked about it and made it a public matter. Right? So we have to be very, very conscious of the drama of our own performance, so that anything we do, if it's good, fine. If it's bad, fine. We are really in that, what Baba said in the Murli of yesterday, that state of equilibrium. I know in the English Murli they wrote the word equanimity, which is a very good word, but there's also the word equilibrium, which is different. And the... we're going to have a traffic control, so let's think about equanimity and equilibrium and see if you can be in yoga for 3 minutes. So to keep oneself in this very concentrated stage where you perceive all the external things and even the internal activities of the mind that are not what you decided to think, this is all drama. And in order for us to be able to stay concentrated in a state of equilibrium and equanimity, we need to be emotion-free. Emotion-free. So if you think about the vices, they can also be described as negative emotions. And if you think about the virtues, they would not be emotions. They would be something else. You may want to distinguish between negative emotions on one side and then pure feelings on the other side. So what I find myself doing is keeping the word emotion along with negative and the word feeling along with pure, and then you've got two ends of a spectrum. And if you're experiencing any kind of negative emotion, then you're not going to be concentrated in soul consciousness, all connected with Baba. But if you're in pure feelings, you are going to be able to be concentrated in soul consciousness and connected with Baba. So this is why I think that we have to become emotion-free. And that also means anxiety-free. So a lot of people have a lot of anxieties, which can be very low-grade anxieties. And so when you have any of that, then Maya has got you. So while you're in the business of being in the body and living through the 24 hours, Baba has told us many, many things about the good way to do that. And to, use the consciousness of our titles, or to use the powers, or to use the knowledge of drama, or to, fulfill the implications of your responsibilities as an instrument, so that you can do all the things that need to be done and still be connected with Baba. So Baba has also said that we can be in the combined form. You see this expression of Shiv Shakti. So the Shakti and Shiva. So when you are in yoga with Baba, You're in the combined form. Baba has also said that Baba is always with you. So if you are in relationship with Baba, then you can be in the combined form. If you are alone, then Maya will combine with you. So he says, be in relationship with Baba while you are doing various things, so that you're doing the things in some or another stage of remembrance of Baba. Especially, you know, when you're cooking, cook in Baba's remembrance, eat in Baba's remembrance, drive your car in Baba's remembrance, talk to people in Baba's remembrance, observe the scenes of the drama with detachment in Baba's remembrance. Whenever you experience big challenges, what support system do you need from Baba? Do you need the support system of a companion, of a parent, of a guide, of a friend? Whatever support system you need when you're facing different things, that relationship with Baba takes that form, and then you are empowered by this combination of yourself and Baba in the face of this or that scene in the drama. And even Baba had told us quite clearly, when you are told something that is very insulting, you have to take that thing and change it into something helpful by the time it reaches your soul. So you had to be fast for that, because the speed of someone's words, the speed of sound, is quite fast, right? When somebody says something to you, it'll reach you pretty much instantly. But between it coming out of their mouth and into your ear, you have to change it. So it's very, very fast. Do you see what I'm saying? So you have to have a lot of practice of taking things in a way that is profitable for you. That means your capacity to interpret the scenes of the drama so that they are beneficial for you is a very, very important skill. Because if you take something in the way that it is intended, then it may not be profitable for you. But if you take it the way you want it, then it will be profitable for you. And that's a choice. And that's called enlightened self-interest. So you position yourself as a person who, under Baba's instructions, has to take profit from whether something is good or bad, negative, positive, victory, defeat, whatever it happens to be, all these different pairs of opposites that were mentioned in the Murali on Sunday. Use your powers of yoga, your concentration, to be able to immediately identify something to your advantage. Because then you will not have any waste thoughts. So having waste thought is optional. And interpreting the different scenes of drama to your personal profit is also optional, but it's recommended. So that for a Raj Yogi, you can say that everything is useful for me, where somebody else may say this is good or bad or whatnot. But Baba has so often said, each and every scene in the drama is beneficial, but then provided you take it that way. If you take something good as bad, then he will say that you're not very bright. So you may think it's bad. He will say, well, it's in drama, so it has to be good. So it's up to you to take that thing as good. And you have to be very skilled to be able to do that. And the skill is developed by actually studying the knowledge of drama, so that you're able to hone your interpretative skills, having remembered all the points of knowledge, and so that no scene in drama can come to you as a bad experience. And whether the people of the world consider it good, bad, or whatever, that's them. That's Kali Yuga. But in confluence age, if your yoga is good, your skill to take different experiences from the world to your advantage, to your personal profit, is the sign of a very good student of this knowledge. You see, when everything is good, then where is the waste thought? You will say, yeah, this is very good because da-da-da-da-da, I can interpret it this way. And when something is good, you only really have one thought about it, which is, this is good. If you think that something is bad, you'll have 1,000 thoughts about it, that it's bad in this way, that way, the other way, and you're going to repeat it 1,000,000 times, you're going to tell everybody, you're going to embroider it, change it, this and that. And it drains a lot of energy. And it's optional. Absolutely optional. So these are some of the different ways that you can really think about yoga and making it deep. I'd like to stop here in case if you have any questions or comments or something. Does anybody have any question? Nobody has any question. Could you follow this, okay? Because it's a quite complicated way that I was putting it. Could you? No? Yes. If you need some more clarification, don't hesitate to come and take the mic and give me your... Yeah, please, Harsha, yeah. You have to talk it on the mic.
The question is about the last point. I understand when there is no waste thought, it is easy to be in subtle state and connect to Baba and stay in that focal distance to stay for a while once Maya throws a spanner and with a waste thought, and he said to turn it around to your benefit. So what if I know that I did something wrong, nobody said anything to me to trigger waste thought, it is my own thing. How do I turn it around?
Yeah, very, very good question. Did everybody understand that? What if I did something wrong? Nobody says anything, but I did something wrong. How can I make that beneficial? I had a very interesting experience of that. It was part of my conversations with Dadi Jenki about a particular subject. And so Dadi had asked me to present an idea to someone. And so I prepared it, wrote it, showed it to Dadi. She said, yeah, that's very good, very good, very good. And so then I presented it to that person. That person didn't like it at all. And took it quite badly. And so then they didn't say anything to me, but they mentioned to Dadi that, oh, you know, Denise did like this and like that and like the other, and that was very, very bad. And Dadi told me, oh, this person didn't like it at all. So I said, oh my God, you know. Because Dadi says, yeah, this is right, you know, and this other person says, no, it's not. And really got quite distressed about it. So I thought, oh, maybe I did something bad to disturb this person to that extent. And so then I was trying to figure out a position to adopt in the face of it, because I think if Dadi says this is good, then it's probably good, right? She's the expert. And then this other person who was no less of an expert says, no, 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 this is bad, you know. So you get yourself quite in a dilemma. So then I put this to Dadi, that, and she said, you're just feeling guilty. So I said, feeling guilty? Maybe I'm feeling guilty about disturbing this person very much. And so one thing she was telling me is it's not good to feel guilty by disturbing somebody. And second thing is, she said, you don't understand drama, because if it is in drama for you to do something correct and somebody to take it badly, then you have to be detached. And then I thought further, okay, well, what if I really do something bad? And she said, you have to be detached from that too. Do not feel guilty about it. Don't repeat it. Be detached. And then that's also in the drama, because once it's done, it's gone in the drama, you can't do anything about it. But this is something Dadi Gulzar also says, that somebody may say something unpleasant to you and you think about it 1,000 times. They did it once, but you experienced it 1,000 times, because every time you think about it, you're re-experiencing it. She said, that's not right. Experience it once is sufficient, and then let it go. You know, so, I mean, you see what they're saying about what yoga is the ability to just stop the repeated thoughts and stop the negative emotions and be really, really detached from yourself, from other people, from everything, and still be a normal human. I mean, we're not normal, of course, but, you know, you're still human. Right? So that's very skilled, I think, a very highly skilled stage that Baba's bringing us to. I see somebody with a question.
It's about detachment. Is it that the drill Baba is giving is especially to make us more detached? Because if we are so emotional about things, I feel myself very emotional, and that's what is bringing me down. Mm-hmm. And in face of situations, that these emotions are being so caught up in the drama. So is it that consistent becoming point that is going to help us to be more detached and emotion-free?
Thank you. Good question. Now, becoming emotion-free is easier said than done, of course. But nevertheless, it is what we are trying to do, is reach a point where we are so clean and that we have worked through all of our issues, because everybody has a lot of issues, isn't it? Say for example, on your body you have a bruise, right? If anything touches that bruise, it will hurt. But if anything touches a part of your body where there's no bruise, it's not going to hurt. So your emotionality is related to areas where your bruises are getting touched. So there are many, many issues that people have. As Baba has told us, we have kinds of karmic accounts, and we have all sorts of unfinished business, and all sorts of wounds and injuries, and he's the supreme surgeon. But we arrive here in this university come hospital with quite a lot of bandages and stuff, you know, that needs a lot of surgery from Baba. And the sign of that is that we get very emotional about things. Now, it doesn't mean that we're bad, but it means that we have things that need to be worked through. And so we need to take however much time we need to take in order to do that. And this is another reason why we have to be very patient. So we have to practice yoga. We have to allow these areas of spiritual wounding to come to the surface. And occasionally Baba will mention about himself as the Ayurvedic doctor. And there are in Hindu bhakti the 12 Jyotirlingams, which are the main Shiva temples of India, and one of them is called Vaidyanath. And that is the aspect of Shiva Baba as the doctor, the Ayurvedic doctor. And so he will make us drink the nectar of knowledge, and that medicine will make all of our stuff flare up, and we will say, wow, what is happening? And sometimes, I haven't heard it lately, but there are a few Muralis in which he says that the Ved, the Ayurvedic doctor, will give you medicine, and that medicine will make your illness flare and become much worse. But do not be afraid, because if there is a very deep wound in your soul, the medicine cannot operate on it until it comes to the surface. And so if you have all kinds of junk rising to the surface, which will take its expression in a lot of emotionality, don't worry about it. This is the medicine working, and it is going to work itself out of your system. And just keep going and do not worry about it. And you'll be fine, you know. Because the illness in the soul of many, many forms of, you know, betrayal and oppression, suppression, repression, different varieties of things happen to people. You know, my personal opinion, this is just me, right? My journey has told me that there are two kinds of sins. One is sins that you do to somebody, and then the other is the sin that somebody does to you. So when you do a sin to somebody, then you will pay for that in one form or another, and you will have to become free from that. And so Baba tells us, you know, karmic accounts have to be settled. You have to experience maybe some illness or some disaster of one sort or another, and then it's over. And once you've paid your debts, you've paid your debts. If you can do it with yoga, much better, but not everybody can. As far as I can see, everybody does lots and lots of yoga, and they still have to have all kinds of disasters as well. But the yoga gives you the ability to get through them more easily. And then there's a sin that somebody does to you, you see. And when somebody does a sin to you, you're still polluted by that thing, you see, because you've got a wound, you've got a scar. You see, and in order to become a deity, then that thing also has to come out, you see. So this is where the healing, the spiritual healing happens, which is part of Baba's process. And so if you're going through hell, keep going, because you can't get to heaven without going through hell. You know the cycle. That's what it shows us. And having reached the confluence age, we say to Baba, we want to be purified. And the purification of the self includes all of the bad things that we have seen and experienced and have happened to us and we got caught up in and so on and so forth. So there's a kind of a purging that happens. and so it will come out in lots of different ways, and being emotionally fragile is one of them. But keep going and you will become experienced and you'll be able to manage yourself better as time goes by. And this is a lifetime commitment, BK Raja. It's not 7 days. It's 7 days a week for the rest of your life. I remember on the third day of my 7-day course, I said, oh my God, how am I going to understand all this in 7 days? This is not possible. And then this flash of understanding came to me and says, self, this is 7 days a week for the rest of your life, so get with the program. And yeah, it was an important realization. And of course, we don't know how long our life is going to go on for, but it's kind of good to be able to mature and grow up and go through the different stages of life and get into old age and still be processing everything and still be developing the yoga. And then, you know, you become, by the end of it, you become a very useful human being, let alone an angel and a pujanya and all these five forms that Baba has been talking to us about. So keep going and you'll be fine. Okay, I have 1 o'clock that says 12:30 and the other one that says 25 past, but I think it's just about time for us to finish. Does anybody have another burning question? Okay, so let's have a couple of minutes of stillness and see how we do. Om Shanti.